from the creators of The Shape. CCC Entertainment Group presents a nostalgic fan film series. Michael Myers, Jason Voorhees, Fred Krueger, and many other iconic horror icons from the 80s and 90s converge in a universe we've all been waiting for. The Horrorverse, Season 1. Available now on YouTube. Awaken the darkness.
Welcome to Around the Reel with your hosts, Aaron Carlson, Charles Lawson, and Samantha Hanna. Ah, shit. Here we go again.
RIM, headquarters, conference room.
Hey, how y'all doing today? Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you great.
Hear you great.
Very good. We're actually live at a RAM clinic right now. It's very noisy in the background, but I'm here for you. Hopefully it works out.
Oh, it's beautiful. So cool. It's beautiful, man. No.
Hi, Paul. Can you hear us?
Yeah, hi guys. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure. We're already on the show, so this is how we kind of roll. We just
we roll right into it.
We always do like this little house cleanup in the beginning, like because there's shit everywhere
ramble.
And we haven't done a podcast.
We ramble about shit before the show actually starts, but we let you be a part of it.
I'm sure
that's part of the appeal.
It is, actually. I think people dig the realism of our show, which is kind of funny. Because we haven't done a show for what?
It's been a minute.
It's been 3 weeks.
Yeah.
It's been a hot minute.
Maybe 3. Mm. Yeah. Usually we do like one a week, if that, or more. And
sometimes
we've actually been making movies, Paul. Yeah,
this is what we what? Yeah. Actual movies have been made?
Actual
Holy
movies.
Shit. Yeah. We've been doing
it. Made. Yeah. I do documentaries.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. I mean, it's been 5 years since I shot one myself, you know. Well, we finished filming Medicine Man 5 years ago. I mean, so.
That was one of our questions.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
excitingly, as part of the screening evening, we have prepared a small update film, a short update film to let you know what has happened in the intervening years.
Oh, wow.
That's awesome. So, when's that supposed to come out? Is that coming out soon?
On Tuesday, November the 14th at 7 p.m., when we screen the film, that will be the bonus content that happens immediately afterwards. I mean, as you know, having seen the film, I think as soon as it finishes, you're like, oh my God,
no,
what happened to everybody? Is everybody okay here?
Yeah.
And the good news is, I mean, as you can see, Poppy down there, Ram is going strong. I mean, remote area medical are just doing brilliantly.
Okay.
Where are you guys at right now?
We have 3 operations going on. I'm joining y'all from Largo, Maryland.
Okay.
We have a team down in Houston, Texas. And another one in Butler, Pennsylvania, right
awesome.
Outside Pittsburgh.
Very cool.
Nice.
Very, very cool.
Now, I'm going to admit, I'm going to throw myself under the bus, guys. I was going to watch a movie last night and ended up having my 2 grandkids with me, so I got stuck watching Disney. But I'm here for the interview, and I'll watch it after.
Okay.
You're really going to want to watch it, Chuck, because it's so, like, fantastically amazing. It's so good.
The house cleaning thing I was going to talk about real quick was just basically we might be rusty, but it's good that we're doing this show because normally we're really silly and stupid and people like fucking like that. I don't know why. However, this episode might be a little more serious because your documentary, Paul, hit me in the balls. This thing is so powerful. It's so good. And we appreciate that because we're working on one right now that's got that same kind of feel. And you inspired me because I'm editing ours right now. And I'm like, holy shit, dude. Paul's movie is fucking ridiculously good. This is
so
crazy good. So let's.
Thank you.
You
deserve everything.
Thank you for making it. So let's do this. Let's do this real quick and then we can get this thing rolling. Paul, please introduce yourself. And then over there in RAM, please introduce yourself right after. And then we'll get into the show.
Sure. I'm Paul Michael Angel. I am a filmmaker from Britain. I started off as a camera operator, working on various documentaries. And then in 2011, I finally kind of got the self-belief to try my own feature-length documentary as a director. Massively cheered on by my old friend and mentor, Victor Bueller, who's a really established and talented feature-length documentary producer, helped me kind of take that plunge. And what can I say? You know, it was 12 years later. I mean, I didn't have gray hair when I started making this movie. The film is hitting high street theaters all over America. And I feel, you know, I'm really happy because it's great to go to festivals and it's great to get some recognition. But a story like this, which is about the struggle that so many Americans face on a daily basis to access free healthcare, I feel it really should be in Main Street theaters because it's the story of the people of America.
Absolutely. I agree. The more people need to see it.
Yep, and they will. Mm-hmm. God damn it. We're going to show them. okay. Over there, Ram headquarters.
Yeah, this is Poppy Green, superintendent to be on. We at Remote Air Medical are honored that we get to be part of this epic journey. And we're alive and kicking and operation right now. It's an honor to be on the show, and thanks for having us.
Well, appreciate it.
Thank you for being here.
Yeah.
For real.
Okay, man. So where do we start on this
one? As long as they're not getting crazy in the background, by the way, I mean, you can leave your mic on.
Yeah.
I know you want to turn it off because people are making noise behind you, but unless it's like really, really loud, leave it on so you can chime in.
Yeah, I don't think we hear any. I don't hear anything. So I think we're good.
Yeah, we're okay.
Okay, so let's roll into this. So this film.
And Aaron, do not.
I'm not.
Spoil it.
I'm not going to try it.
Do
try.
Not.
Aaron can't spoil. Aaron spoils everything. So get Sam, tell us about this film.
Yeah, Sam, you do it because I'll end up telling the whole motherfucker. I'll say it all.
Okay, Aaron, don't spoil it.
I will do
it.
I'll do my best.
No spoilers.
Okay.
So this film, gosh, where do I even begin? I
told you, it's not easy.
Yeah, it's not easy. It's amazing. It's amazing. And I don't even know. Like, I am so at loss for words to even say anything. I don't even know what to say.
And that's okay. That's why, Paul is here. No, that's why Paul is here, though.
It's an important subject.
Paul can share it. Paul, please. Why don't you go into a little bit about what the film is entailing? And then we can start kind of doing an interview, if we can, without spoiling it.
The official elevator pitch, okay, I'm going to be super corporate about this.
Love it.
Sure. Okay.
It's a kind of like documentary adventure on one hand, about a British-born Amazonian cowboy turned wildlife TV star who hits a kind of midlife crisis or an epiphany in life and decides to give it all up, sell the house, sell the car, totally commit to this one cause, which is to deliver free healthcare to those in America that are in desperate need of access to good services. And he sticks by this kind of vow of poverty commitment for 25 years and grows the organization to deliver, is it $195 million of free care now, Poppy?
Yeah, a little over that.
Yeah. To nearly a million people, using nearly a million volunteers. They basically become the largest organization of their type in the United States. And he never wavers from this commitment, from living life like very, very simply, never takes a salary.
Sleeps on the floor.
Yeah, don't spoil it, Tim.
I'm sorry, but he sleeps on the floor.
No, it's badass.
And you know, part of my job is to check this stuff out. It's like, okay, you know, he talks the talk, but does he walk the walk?
Right.
And I never found any fault. You know, I never found it was all absolutely true. Like, he was living that way right up until his last days. So an inspiration, and it happens to him in middle age. He takes this complete turn in life in middle age. And a man in my position, similarly, you know, it's very inspiring to think that it's never too late to make that change. He kind of develops and evolves a lot as a person from the beginning to the end of the film, much like the organization. So there's some nice development there, and yeah, I'm happy about that, because it's easy to shoot a portrait, but it's harder to shoot to find a story that's actually going to progress. Yeah. I call it deliverable progression.
Yeah, where you actually need an update, because we need to know, like, what's happening now.
yeah. So the nice thing is that on Tuesday, November the 14th at 7 p.m., all across America at 700 theaters, we're screening, and there's going to be a update film following the main feature that gives you the information about what's happened since we stopped filming in 2018. What has happened to this tremendous organization that this incredible humanitarian has created? And, you know, I'm not going to go into the details. They're doing okay. Let's just say they're doing okay.
Well, we can see that. We have one of them here.
So yeah, Poppy's here, bro. Yeah, he's got Poppy's her back. Here. Okay, so the midlife thing, I think you hit a nerve with me on that, and that's what really attracted me to this when I started watching it, because I'm that guy. I'm 50 years old, right? And I had a certain way of living my life up to, I don't know, when I was in my 40s, maybe, Sam? I don't know. She knows better than I do. She tracked all this. It's all written down. Like, every fuck up I've ever done, she's got written down. So,
and there was a lot of them.
There's a ton. She's got stacks and stacks of paper.
Hence his name.
Right? However, you know, there was a moment that I had where I realized a lot of the choices I made and the way I thought was really messed up. It wasn't right. And I know why I did it now, you know, because I was protecting me, you know. But I watched this movie, and there's a point where, you know, Stan talks about that. And it really hit me even harder, your movie. I mean, it starts out great, but that's a moment where I think a lot of people, I want to think a lot of people might get something out of it, because we all change. You know, we all have this opportunity to change. What did Rick Grimes say in Walking Dead? We all can change. You know, it can happen.
Yeah.
It can fucking happen. And, you know, watching him do that in this film is amazing. It's absolutely a stunning story. It's crazy. Is. It's crazy good. As a documentary person who goes out there and makes a movie, we can relate that we're on our second one now. Sam is the director of those, like she said. And it's interesting to watch another person's documentary, because I'm thinking, like Sam said last night, where'd he get all this footage from? You know, and I'm like, holy shit, yeah, I know, where the hell? So I know that was a question she had, and I probably jumped the gun on that, Sam, but...
we kind of figured it out halfway through.
Yeah, you kind of...
We did figure it out.
It makes sense.
You got the footage, or at least a lot of it.
Yeah, but when it first starts, you're like, how the hell did he do this? It's like, it's amazing. So... You want to tell us a little bit about the process?
You're absolutely right. It's kind of sneaky, because we start dropping the footage in without the explanation, well, without the context of how we could have possibly acquired that footage.
Right.
But then later in the story, that's when I'm supposed to penny drop for you guys. You're like, oh, that's how, because
that's
how, yeah. Sam said it. I'm still crying watching it. And Sam's like, that's how he got it. I'm like, oh, yeah, sorry.
There were such moments of joy discovering good bits of archive. Our archivist is an absolute demon. He's just like digging into tunneling, he calls it, tunneling constantly, finding stuff. And,
cool.
You know, there's a scene where Stan wrangles I think it's a water buffalo, right?
Yeah.
But he actually tells a story about wrangling a longhorn bull, right?
Yeah.
So we found some footage of him wrangling a water buffalo in Africa, which is so close. And like in the story, he's talking about when he ties up the hind legs of the animal, and it kicks out at him.
Yeah.
And the exact footage of like him doing the same thing to a water buffalo, and it kicks out at him, and it's in close up. And you're like, oh my God, we've got all the elements to actually tell the step-by-step process of what. That's just sheer good fortune.
Oh gosh.
I love it when it happens, though. It's
yes,
fun, right?
It's it great. Is cool it's when it happens. It's like magic. It's, you know what you're doing when that happens, I guess.
Yeah, maybe that is like a bit of destiny. But I mean, I think the reason the film is so powerful is not to do with the editing, the directing, the shooting, editing, anything like that. It's because he's got this awesome story, and frankly, any fool could put it in the frame and make it work.
Let's not downplay yourself so much. Please.
Well, I kind of disagree with that because I also do documentaries.
Any fool can do this.
Not really.
Don't say that.
Be humble a little bit.
You're humble in that, and that's great.
Come on, man. It takes talent to do what you guys do.
You're absolutely right. There was a great story in Stanbra. There was a great story there.
Absolutely.
And that was given. You know, that was a gift, I guess. But to tell the story, it's powerful the way that you told the story and the way that you did that. So definitely you deserve a lot more credit than that, I think, because it isn't easy to put a story together and make it for everyone to understand. And I struggle a little with that at times because I know what I understand is different than what other people will understand, and especially when it comes to certain things. And like the medical world is one of those things where people have so many different opinions and so many different ideas about it that, you know, to tell the story, it's tricky to really, you know, tell that story, the medical part of it, in a way that everyone will understand. And I think you did an amazing job of that. So I definitely credit you very highly on your ability to tell that story, because that's not easy.
Yeah, his story especially.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of politics in this one, if you think about it.
But
and
there's, yeah.
That's where it gets kind of hard as a filmmaker. Like, you don't want to go out there and be bipartisan. You want to be partisan. You want to kind of just tell the story. You know, here's both sides of what's going on.
Exactly.
Right? And it can get tricky because you've got an audience to keep, Paul. You can't piss everybody off.
Make them cry. Make them think about it. You know, you try and do all those things in a good documentary.
Yes.
And, you know, I was literally relieved to see that the stuff I was saying about the healthcare situation actually resonated with American people, because I am an outsider. You know, I have had the privilege of coming in and seeing what I think is like my truth about this situation and then trying to portray it, but hoping to God that, you know, it connects with people and it's kind of sophisticated enough to not be kind of like simplistic to them. Because, and you know, I think the way that we dealt with politics is just to say, oh, look, like here it is. Healthcare's clearly been a political football that's been kicked back and forth by everybody, and that's not good for the topic. That hasn't helped the issue,
right?
And there it is on screen, and we're not making any judgments here. We're not picking sides. We're saying that, like, generally, the whole politicization of the topic has done it no favors, and done the patients of America no favors. That's kind of the approach we took.
I hope
that comes across as like a little bit like we've ducked the question or evaded, you know, but we just wanted to be unbiased and say, look, judge for yourselves, take a look at this. Here's a clinic on the West Coast, here's a clinic in the East Coast, here's a clinic in Middle America. You've seen every demographic, African American, Hispanic, white, whatever it is, it's clearly an issue that goes across all demographics. So we've tried to sort of make it a universal issue, and
you did finally, that. You did.
That's what Stan's whole approach to the issue was. Don't be apolitical. Don't get caught up in that. If you meet a Republican politician one week, we'll make sure you meet a Democratic politician the next week. Keep it all, you know. Hopefully we've maintained that ethos and people find that acceptable.
You did a great job of it. And I love how, this is kind of a little bit of a spoiler, but not really, but I love how you kept the couple in there that actually went and got the help from the clinic, but also weren't supportive of that whole idea. So
yeah.
So that was, I mean, and Aaron and I looked at each other and we're like, what? You know, but because we don't understand that side, but there's a lot of people that do. And so keeping that in there kind of, you know, keeps it all, for everyone, basically, because there's all these different sides and opinions to this, And so I loved that you put them in there with their opinions, because it's important, I think. And it makes you think that there are other ways to look at it. So
Definitely. And
that's a tricky thing as a documentarian that you have to kind of do, is include everyone and tell both sides. And it can be tricky.
Well, I think those inherent contradictions, those are the things that documentaries are made of. Mm-hmm. Because if the answer to this was simple, it would probably be dealt with already, right?
No,
this is like inherently problematic, and mm-hmm. that's why people come out with like strange contradictory opinions. And that's like any situation, any conflict, whatever's going on. If it was easy to solve, it would have been done already, and it's not. It's kind of like all twisted up and complex.
Yes.
And people are a bit kind of confused about what to think about it almost. So I'm glad like you liked that. I thought it was important. I hope those people don't feel like I kind of hung them out to dry or anything. But
feel like that at all. I just felt like you allowed them their side and their opinion, and I think that's great.
Yeah, and you captured it. Good. I'm glad, because it doesn't make sense to me. I can't. It drives me nuts.
But that's
and you know
because
this.
But that's because you don't feel that way. But people that do feel that way will understand.
But
what
I don't understand
saying.
How they can feel
I
that
need
way.
To go, excuse me, I'm going to watch this. I'm right back.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Chuck. Yeah, you need to watch. Yeah, Chuck. Sorry. There's people out there, Charles. Here, I'm going to break it down real quick. You know that show up for free healthcare, but wouldn't vote for free healthcare for America.
Right. But they would show up and receive it.
Like, well, what the fuck is there? What? You know, so, because it's a political thing, and they feel right. like they're going to end up, you know, it's this socialist thing that they've got in their fucking head. And one of the things that I love about the movie that you find out is that, you know, this is just common sense. You know, that's the thing. You know, helping other people is common sense. You know, how and why did it become a political thing? You know, and that's the beauty of this story, you know, and that's the thing that Stan's talking about in this. Paul, you captured this well. And to see Ram still doing what they're doing, you know, shows that this is a need. So why the fuck is it a problem? I don't get that. And that's why sometimes I love people, and sometimes there's certain people I can't stand them. I hate them. I don't get it. I really don't. It's amazing to me that there's such a buffer between like what is really going on and what people choose to believe. Does that make sense?
Kind of, yeah. But there's a beauty also in people's differences too, and I think that's what.
Yeah,
keeps...
but there's unhealthy like moments. Like true. It's unhealthy. Think that way. Like they're there to get help, but you know they wouldn't allow anybody else or doesn't want to encourage that.
It's their beliefs.
What the hell?
It's their beliefs. You got to respect everyone has their own beliefs. So. You gotta. I mean, that's what I took from it, was to respect. Yeah. You know, everyone's.
Well, you're good at that. I'm no good at that. I can't.
Well, that's why I make the documentaries, and you don't.
Exactly. I just edit.
Aaron's just sitting there going, hypocrite.
Yeah. Yeah, I edit. I edit.
No, Aaron got really mad.
Well, I did. I got mad as hell.
He got mad. So yeah.
It fired me up, Paul.
I was trying to go to sleep, and he was just bitching because he was all mad. I was like,
and crying at the same time, because Stan's a soldier, man. Yeah. My dude is just a hero. And that's another thing. This is a hero's journey. This guy's story is ridiculous. How good it is. You know, he's my Rocky now. He is. It's just like, no matter what, he didn't quit. So okay,
you
gonna
sleep on the floor tonight, Aaron?
Should sleep on the floor.
I need to, but I probably wouldn't because it's uncomfortable for me. But
very good for your back.
That's what I hear. But my neck will be all jacked. I'm old. Anyway,
just put a towel on the ground like Stallone.
Right.
Sorry if you hear my dog barking. It's fine. Being a jerk.
Okay, so in the film, we find out that, you know, this is a remote area medical, right? So this is an organization that he created to go and help people everywhere, if possible, in the United States, for sure. But he also went to other countries, right? So, Poppy, why don't you explain where you're at right now and what's going on so that this audience that we have knows, like, you guys are still rolling.
Yeah, this weekend we have three operations going on. So I'm out here in Largo, Maryland, just outside of D.C. We have a team down in Houston, Texas. We also have a team that is in Butler, Pennsylvania. And you're probably thinking, remote? That's not very remote. But for the patients that we serve, they don't have access to care. They can have world-class healthcare facilities in walking distance, but the financial barriers are such that they really, they might as well be 26 days by foot away from healthcare. And it's heartbreaking. And we see this in cities all across America. We're still out there in rural communities. And what we do is we transform these churches, schools, fairgrounds into fully functioning operational centers where we can provide dental cleanings, fillings. We do dental extractions. Just today, we've taken out some wisdom teeth. We do medical exams, including women's health. We make eyeglasses on site. We pull complete eye exams. And we're just here trying to do what we can. And I love the commentary about, you know, people out there that seemingly vote against their own interest. But we're just here to serve. It doesn't matter who you are, what you believe in. And there's some epic moments from working alongside Stan, the man who really did walk the walk, that, you know, of course, didn't make it into the film. But one of them that really speaks to the nature of the problem was at Wise, Virginia, where we served for over 20 years continuously. And at Wise, or in Virginia, in the whole state, they kind of bounce between political parties every 8 years, kind of balancing. And the current governor at the time addresses this crowd, hundreds of people. And this just everyday American working class woman gets up in the back of the crowd, shouts that she knows Jesus Christ, the Sand Rock, who the heck are you? We're just like, oh no. This lady is in favor of the government, but you know, that's the sentiment. That's how people feel. And we don't have any politics in what we do. Right. We're just here to help.
It's unbelievable.
What does your basic setup look like as far as like amount of people doing what they're doing for people as they come in? Like how many
it's huge, Chuck. It's crazy.
I realize that, but yeah. This is some people
didn't watch the movie.
They can't see pictures.
Yeah. So if you don't like the dentist, stay away. You're where I'm at.
Aaron, you're out.
Yeah. Okay.
We got 20 dental operatories. So imagine like a 10 by 10 pop-up tent inside. You have a dental chair. You have a dental unit that has everything you'd see at a normal dental office. We got all the instruments. We have autoclaves, all that kind of standard stuff. But you're in a high school, or right now we're in a community college. We're in their like rec center gym. Like it was musty and sweaty and smelled like jock strap.
Very good.
Thursday, yeah. And then you walk in, we work these long hours. We roll in this morning at 4:30 and it smells like a dental office.
Wow.
And it sounds like a dental office. So we got more than 20 providers here. They're kind of rotating through shifts. It's a 12-hour workday. We have more than 20 dentists here providing care. And you see people coming in with that acute tooth pain. They can't eat. They saw food only. And believe it or not, they come in here and they get their teeth extracted and they have like a mouth full of bloody gauze. And they're coming up to you like they want to like just give
they
you
wanna
this
give
hug.
They want to give you a hug. Oh, yeah. I know. Yeah, I deal with
and
that.
You're like,
yeah. Right. You're like, no, I don't want your bloody gauze around me.
So for your for your dental practitioners, so do you have people who are volunteering their time to come in and they come in shifts and waves and however they can? Yep. Is it just everybody from the local communities, or do you guys have travelers that come with you and chase you around as well?
So we like to get the volunteers from the community as we can, but we're like just powered by volunteers. You know, Stan was the ultimate volunteer, took no paycheck, slept on the floor. His shoes would have holes in them.
If he had them on.
You know,
if he had them on.
Good badass.
Now you know why he didn't wear them though. No, they had holes in them.
No, this man was Tarzan, dude. I'm telling you. He was. Yeah. I'm telling you. It's great.
And he, like, you'd have to pass the hat around the office so someone could go get him a new pair of Sauconies. Or maybe brought back some nice white Nikes. That wouldn't do that to be tan, Saucony
right.
shoes. But yeah, he was the ultimate volunteer, and that's what keeps us going to this day. We do have some people that follow us all across the country that just love to give back, that have the means to give back, because they're paying their own way. Mm-hmm. They are taking money out of their pocket They're giving up their weekend. We got this Dr. Seitz here. He's down here from New York City. His wife is a nurse anesthetist, so she's this high income earner, and she's down here volunteering as his dental assistant.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, they're from New York, and they come all across the country just so that they can give back. They recognize that when you have and others are in need, there's something wrong with that when the disparity is so large.
Yeah.
We got lots of great volunteers.
That's awesome. And you have that despite the fact that there are, what we learned, many that want to or would do it, but
volunteer.
Can't.
Yeah, but can't. Yeah. But and can't, and, yeah. And the film kind of explains at the end where, you know, Stan's his drive to get to a certain point, what it did. Has it gotten any better since for volunteers?
You'll have to watch the follow-up documentary afterwards.
Yeah. Right. That's a great point. You see that follow-up, you'll hear about some new states that good. We have been able to serve in.
Awesome.
But yeah, it's still slow going.
Damn.
It's not where we'd like for it to be.
It's so
stupid. Some states have opened up to allow volunteers to cross into them.
Hello, Around the Reel. Or should I say Around the Reelandia? I don't know. Which you prefer? Why don't you let me know? An invitation. You can reach out to me. You can communicate with me. Yes, you can actually reach me through Aaron at Around the Reel. Or you can reach me directly at thecoachrick@gmail.com. thecoachrick. thecoachrick@gmail.com. Let me know. What do you think? Around the Reel? Around the Reelandia? Do you have a preference? How about we get a little deeper? What the hell do you want me to talk about? That would be great. Also, I would love to hear what you might want to hear from me. Who the heck am I? Well, if you've been listening, maybe you've heard me. Recently, haven't made many installments. Life has been lifing a lot, and it happens sometimes, guys. So that's okay. We're back, sort of, maybe. I don't know. We'll see. But I made an effort to get these in once a week, and Aaron does his amazing work in editing and gives me some background music. And, you know, they're awesome. Mid-segment installments. That's what Coach's Corner is. That's what this segment is called. It's Coach's Corner. Why? Because I'm an acting coach. I'm also a life coach and a business coach. I'm a coach. I've been doing coaching. I've been coaching for decades. I'm getting close to saying I've been an acting coach for a decade. That's kind of fun also. We're over 7.5 years now. And I now have 3 classes, Monday night live in Spokane, Wednesday night on Zoom, which I just got out of. Typically, that's when I do these is Wednesday nights because I'm in front of my computer. And then Thursday night in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, also live. So I'm really enjoying that. I love being a part of the Around the Reel family. I'm also part of the Horrorverse family, which is under the umbrella of CCC Entertainment. You know, all of that is under CCC Entertainment, right? So if you don't know, well, then look them up. Look up CCC Entertainment on YouTube. Look up Coach's Corner on YouTube. COACH'S Corner. Coach's Corner. What I've done is I created a YouTube channel for these installments. That's the only thing that's there. They're not as good as when you see the YouTube version of the podcast, right? Because like I said, Aaron edits, gives me some background music. It's just that much sweeter. Hopefully, you'll get some words that'll make a difference for you here in Coach's Corner. That's my effort. That's what I'm striving for. As I do inside of my craft, inside of my art, my goal is to give my gift. My goal is that that gift is going to make a difference in your life, that it's going to touch your heart, it's going to touch your soul, and it's going to help you heal. It's going to help you feel, maybe, if it's not healing, at least feeling, right? I'm way, way beyond just for entertainment's sake. I think there is great power inside of art. I think there is great power inside of our craft as actors. Again, I do make an effort to speak to all disciplines, to artists in general, right? Musicians, music uplifts, music helps us feel. Painters, sculptors, whatever your medium is, let's take a look at the energy we put behind it, and then we have a different gift to give. But that's not what I want to talk about tonight. And I say tonight because it is 10:31 p.m. Pacific Standard Time right now. Like I said, I'm just getting out of my class, my Zoom class, which I'm grateful for. But big announcement today. An offer has been accepted by the negotiating committee of SAG-AFTRA. This is the actor's strike, right? And I have kept quiet about this. And so, you know, 2 cents time. I've been a member of the union since 1997. That's been a little bit of a while. I have never lived from my craft. I've never been able to support myself, to support my lifestyle, none of that. As the majority of the union is in that same boat. What is it? 86% of the union doesn't even qualify for health insurance. What we've learned is that union membership is 160,000 people. This is for SAG-AFTRA. Now, those used to be two separate unions, for those of you who don't know, and eventually they merged, which was probably the big screw-up number one for us little people. But we don't need to get into that. It is what it is, right? It's SAG-AFTRA. That's the Actors Performers Union. And 86% of those 160,000 people don't make enough. Is that because they're not talented? Is that because they're not? No. The system is effed up. Let me be a little more direct. The system is fucked up. FUBAR. Beyond measure. Why do I say that? Well, because in this world of chasing stardom, in this world of wanting to be the one, everybody's missing their power. Everybody's missing the reality. So, you know, and this is along the lines of a lot of what I work to. Again, I'm a coach. I'm an acting coach. I don't like calling myself a teacher. The teaching thing is weird. But I do hope that the fellow artists that I get to play with on a weekly basis come to the realization that they are unique, that they are one of a kind. So if you're one of a kind, you're not irreplaceable. You're not a dime a dozen. But this is where the industry has led you to believe, right? So to rise above, yeah, sure, you got to work hard and all that. And all that's true. You absolutely have to work your ass off because there are millions working at it. Absolutely. Millions. Shit, there's millions in LA alone. What? Why should someone hire you when you're not even willing to go to class once a week? Give me a break. Right? But the way the industry set up, the way stardom, the way celebrity, you know, all that bullshit. Why doesn't anyone ever just take a step back and say, well, who's setting these standards? Why? Oh, they're saying that this is what the public wants? Really? Do you believe that? Do you believe that you're that stupid? Because, oh my God, look at the fucking programming. They think you're a complete fucking idiot. Yeah. And what's even worse is that they know that you are. That's their thinking. They know that they can lie to you. And as long as they repeat it often enough and loud enough, you're going to believe it. It's kind of a good definition for propaganda. But let's stick to the industry. Let's stick to entertainment. Shall we? The system is FUBAR, ladies and gentlemen. Fucked up beyond recognition. Which is why it's time for a renaissance, which is why it's time for a revolution, which is why it's time to stop playing that stupid game. This strike should continue for 1-2 years. The whole AI conversation. My God, in what world does the creator not get a decent percentage? Those people that are responsible for creating the product. And, you know, my take on it is when we're talking about any kind of television show or film, the actor is bringing you, let's call it 90% of the most important stuff. Without the performance, you don't have shit. Without the performance, you don't have shit. Now, I'm not just talking about a competent performance. There's a lot of people that are good actors. They're good technicians. But when you get a real performance, when you get someone who's actually there, present, emotionally invested and involved, it touches you, right? That's the hook that grabs the audience. Without the performance, you have nothing. That does not make the actor any more important. Also something I talk to my classes about. Because so many other disciplines and experts are involved in bringing the final product to it. But honestly, a true master is an artist and a technician. And to be able to do that on a dime, on call, on set, requires mastery. That mastery only happens with consistency, with practice, with ongoing. And it's not like something, you know, you learn. But let's just, my class is called The Actor's Dojo for a reason. Just as in a regular dojo, you want to become a black belt. Hey, awesome, you work your ass off, you become a black belt. Maybe it's going to take you 1, 2, 3, 4 years. I don't know. Once you get that black belt, are you done? Is it over? Or, as my sensei tells me, Once you're a black belt, now you're ready to start learning. If you stop practicing, and musicians back me up on this, will you please? If you put your instrument down for 6 months, if you don't practice one move for 6 months, what do you think's going to happen? You're going to get rusty, right? You're going to get, you're going to have to work your way back up to that point. And I've got tons of examples of that. What we do as artists, and in this case for actors in the inside of the union, requires a huge commitment and discipline. And we do it knowing that we may never support ourselves from this. And these a-holes want to make hundreds of millions of dollars and say that they can't afford to pay us residuals. That means a living wage. So here's my thing on it. The negotiators that are fighting for us right now aren't even fighting for 2%. Well, then screw them. They're on the take. I do. I think union membership's been on the take. You really want to know what's going on? Why don't you call for some forensic accounting of the union? Where has the money gone? Who's been paid off? Who's been, you know, why does SAG-AFTRA have a whole floor in their new building dedicated to only lawyers? What are those lawyers doing? There's so much shit that goes down and so many people willing to bend over because, oh my God, yes, oh, I love being in the union. Oh, yes, I fuck off. Grow the fuck up and start standing for what's right. It's time. I don't buy that this is a good deal for the actor. And when I say the actor, I mean the 86% that doesn't qualify for insurance just yet. These streaming companies are making hundreds of millions of dollars. I get it. They're, you know, need to make money for their shareholders, blah, blah, blah. You know what? Let's give the creators 20% of the profits. Is that so unreasonable? You know what that 20% would do? I say that 20% will give all members of the union a living wage, a pension, and health care. And that living wage would actually be really good, where they could actually be real artists and not have to have two or three other jobs to support their families. That's a big one. Maybe we should end on that one. That's a pretty picture. Is that so wrong? I'm not a communist, by the way, in any stretch of the imagination. How much should the creator get? How much? Let me know at thecoachrick@gmail.com. I love you. God bless you. Take care.
How stupid is that? That you can't go help people and your doctor. I mean, this is the stuff that drives me nuts.
It does, but there's progress, so that's good. That's a good thing.
My man dedicated his life, well, half of his life, to get to that point, and it's like, okay, guys, watch the fucking. See, this is why your movie's important, Paul. Because if certain people can watch this, I'm talking about those political people. If they can watch this shit and get an idea of the sacrifice, you know, and the motivation of Stan Brock and why it was important for him to do this and where his heart was. If you can't connect to that, there's something wrong with you.
Well, everyone,
there is something wrong. Yeah. You are looking at it wrong because this is just about, this is being humane. This is about like empathy. You know, the thing that he talked about that, you know, he lacked in his life, which I understood because I didn't have it either. And then later he learned it and then he gives it all. Like, if you can't understand this, see, this is, okay, Paul, your documentary got me, bro. I'm telling you.
Give Aaron 5 minutes. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm gonna shut up. Go ahead, please. Someone talk.
It's a lot.
And I think that's why it was such an easy choice to not get mired in the politics, because when you've got so much heart, like, just keep going back to that. But as you say, maybe this approach would actually work for politicians when they see it, because it is so raw and it is so emotional, and we don't, you know, we don't get caught up in the politics and make judgments. It might be a kind of tool for them to be able to watch and reconnect with this issue. I get that politicians might be fatigued with trying to address the healthcare system. I mean, goodness knows enough people have tried over the years.
A long time.
And I understand that the American people might be fatigued with hearing about how terrible their healthcare system is. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of why you need that awesome Stan Brock story in the movie to pull it through. So yeah, I got high hopes that maybe after November the 14th, we can do some screenings in Washington or do a screening in Congress. I mean, Stan made it to a congressional committee invited by Bernie Sanders, and it'd be wonderful if we could do something similar.
So if the opportunity presented itself for this situation to get involved in politics, would that be something that you would be willing to do, or would you want to stay away from that?
I mean, I'd have to play it a bit like Stan, in that I'd just have to say, oh, look, I've been down there and I've borne witness and this is what I saw, but there's no way I know enough about the issues to get involved in the... A.D. Barkin, who's no longer with us, he died on November the 1st this year. Oh, he seems like the guy who was good at getting into the issues and the ins and outs of it and understanding the system and suggesting solutions and the way forward. I'm not really capable of doing that. But, I mean, there are some things that just seem obviously wrong, though, and if I may just rip through those.
Oh, yeah, please.
The ACA, right, it doesn't cover dental and it doesn't cover vision. Mm-hmm. Still got massive co-payments to make. You've still got the deductibles issue to get around. Like, you've got to pay like the first 500 or the first 1,000 or whatever your deductible is. And then the ACA allows each state to kind of like opt out of stuff. Right. So you can kind of have Obamacare Lite. You can have ACA Lite in certain states. And that's what happens in the movie. Like in Virginia in 2015, they basically vote not to extend like the full strength ACA and refused like federal government money. So they cut their nose off to spite their face, and kind of knowing that there's people in their state with healthcare needs that could use that money to sort themselves out. I mean, that's deeply wrong.
It is.
It is. What blows my mind personally is the fact that people don't understand how health affects people and pain affects people. And if you have people that are healthier, they're going to produce more.
They're
going
to
work more. They're going to be happier. They're going to raise their kids better. There's going to be less mental health. There's going
to
be less...
Show up and go to work.
Yes, right. Exactly.
I mean,
they
there's
will.
There's so many problems you can solve with just pure health in and of itself, because I think that a lot of people get tired of their pain. And they get grumpy and they get mad and they take it out on whoever's closest to them. And you have so many other problems that come from that if you just have healthy people. And I think if everyone realized that if we were all healthy, we'd all be better people.
We're
at our best when we're healthy.
Facts. Facts.
That's just the way
it is. It's just the way it is.
And if we're dealing with pain, we're, you know, there's, you can only deal with it for so long before you start to get upset and grumpy and angry and stuff, because pain is not fun.
If I get a headache, I don't want to do shit.
Exactly.
I want to sit down.
Exactly.
It's just that simple.
If we could keep our citizens of America healthy, then we would have a whole better America.
It would be, yeah. It's a no-brainer.
I think that's what people miss.
Literally good for the economy. If you want to just be like a hard old capitalist about it, it's also good for that too.
It is. That's exactly it. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you look at the homeless population and you think of, you know, how many are on Social Security and things because of their problems that they have. If all those were handled and taken care of properly, if they were medicated properly, if they had all the things that they needed and the medical care that they needed, would they be in that situation?
Yeah.
Probably not.
That percentage would probably drop quite a bit.
Quite a bit of them would probably not be on Social Security. So if you think about it, if you put the money in the correct place, then you're not going to have to pay it in through Social Security or whatever else because people are unable to work or unable to be a productive member of society because of their issues that could be handled with medical care.
There's a group of people in this country that believe that enabling people not to go out and bust their ass and work for what they get, they can't give them handouts. And that's how they look at it. It's pure and simple. And that's not the case because everybody's story is different. You know, a lot of these people that have this mentality honestly have not lived the type of lives that some people have had to deal with. They have no idea what they're talking about. And that's where it gets me. Like, you really wish you could have like a way to take them out of their life, their little cozy life, and put their asses in the ghetto, you know? And then, okay, let's see how you grow up in the ghetto for a minute. And then they go, oh shit, I'm wrong. And you're like, okay, now go back to your life and make some good choices. Let's go. Okay. Seriously, I wish you could do that, right? That's the only way they could even get a fathom of the smell and the taste and the struggle of the reality that some people have.
Well, there's a lot of privileged people in America.
I hate to even say it because a lot of them aren't even privileged. It's just what they were taught.
No, they're privileged, a lot of them.
Yeah, but there's some people that went to RAM that were privileged and still wouldn't fucking agree with that. You understand what I mean by that? So it's because of what they were taught. You know, they were taught a certain way and they're so stubborn. They won't let it go.
An open mind is a better way.
And then you get someone like Stan who goes out there with an open mind, knowing that he was stubborn, and is trying to change the world. One guy.
Yeah.
Damn it!
Calm down, Aaron.
Oh, man.
It's okay. It's okay.
All right.
Now, we have high hopes for everyone getting this message that
this movie's great.
That you put out.
This
there
movie's great. Yeah, it's important.
Such an important message. It's so important.
It really is. Okay, Paul. So you go out there and you're making this movie for how long did you say you were making it? 5 years or is it longer?
It's 6 years of filming and then kind of 2 years more, not constantly, but 2 years more of the editing process. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. What was it like for you being around someone like Stan? I mean, this guy is, like I said, to me, he's like that Rocky. He's that guy. He's a fucking hero. So what did that do to you personally? Did you get anything special out of that?
Well, he's a man that's achieved so much and who is very charismatic. So initially, there's something quite intimidating about being around a guy like that. He was 76 when I met him and I was 34. And I think on that first trip, I first met him in Sacramento at a clinic, huge clinic at Cal Expo. I think 5,000 people treated that clinic for over 4 days, massive. And I think during that clinic, there was a distinct feeling like, who is this oik that's flown in from London? All the same questions that the TV news guys have been asking me for the last 20 years. You can't even think of an original bloody question. And I kind of had to earn his respect. You got to earn your spurs if you're a cowboy. But to be honest, I think that's the same process with anybody. You don't really just have the right to turn up in somebody's life and shove a camera in their face and say, come on then, pour it out, give it to me. You've got to go from first base, second base, third base, and then you get to home base. There's no like direct to home base. See how I'm using American analogies?
I love it. You're doing good. You're doing good, Paul.
You're doing great.
So hard to relate, but so you got to earn it. And honestly, the vibe around Stan is he is a man of deeds and not words, and that really does come across, I think, in the film. He's just constantly doing stuff. Didn't really love small talk. There was Poppy, I always say there's three things he loved to talk about: healthcare, horses, and aviation. Like, if you mentioned one of those, it was like a Springer Spaniel that could like pop up. Their ears would pop up. Really,
there he was all of a sudden.
Yeah. But otherwise, you know, just getting on with the job. Very busy. I mean, he was like personally answering every email.
Wow. Poppy, did you get to meet him, Poppy?
Yeah, I spent several years working alongside Stan. And I have to echo that sentiment of, you know, a lot of people, they talk the talk with Stan. You had to earn your stripes. He had a saying that he would issue to us frequently, that a cowboy carries his own saddle. And that meant like, oh, we're going away for a week, you better have enough food in your backpack.
Right.
It meant like, oh, like, you want to do laundry? Like, not on the clock, not while we're working. Like, you better have a bar of soap in your bag to wash your pants. Oh, like, distinctly, I remember a hurricane hit Houston, and he was just like, okay, who's driving? And I'm like,
what the fuck?
Tennessee, 19 hours. And he goes, I told them we'll be there in 24. And so I was like, oh, okay. It's like, literally, like, you just got in the truck and you just start driving, and you didn't know when you were coming back, but you knew that if you packed too many clothes and your truck was overweight, that you would have had to pay that ticket yourself. It was an absolute honor, though. Like, he was a legend. Like, we would, you know, you think about like your hotel room bed, it's uncomfortable. There were operations, we'd be out in the middle of rural America. And he'd be sleeping in the bed of like 1990s diesel pickup truck thing. And like, I forever remember showing up after sleeping in like a motel room, and across the field, Stan had found like a 5-gallon bucket, filled it up with water. And you know, he's across the field, he had some privacy, but he's just bathing in the nude.
Yes.
Like, okay, I showed up to work, and here's my 80-year-old boss across the field showering with a bucket.
Okay, and I'm shit.
With my, you know, I didn't get enough channels on the motel room TV. It was a lot of fun. It was a challenge, but privilege of a lifetime for sure.
The dude fought like anacondas in the water. Like, you know what I mean? This is a cowboy. This is a man. He didn't play. He didn't have that fear like a lot of us have.
This man who, whilst wrestling an anaconda, is concerned that he's looking at the right camera to get
right.
Yes, that's insane. Like, I'd be pissing my pants.
Am I looking the right?
Right. Yeah. You know much. Yeah, you know how many turds would be floating on the water if that was me? They'd just be floating around me. I'm like, get the turd out of the water. I shit. I'm sorry, guys. I would lost my mind. He was cool as fuck.
Yeah. Is this my good side? Whilst he's talking, like, literally pulling it off his face. So yes.
Yeah.
Speak to the operator.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unbelievable. When you find
footage like that, it's just it's all you ever wanted.
Yeah. It's an unbelievable story, man. It's so good. It's so good. I'm really impressed with this specific story. And Paul, again, like these guys said too, you know, this film is good. I mean, you put some magic into it. Your direction, the edit. I mean, it's a fucking great movie. You should be really proud of this.
Thank you. You know, I think a lot of the hard work is done by that archivist, Alex Zidane.
You're so humble.
Katie Breyer and Tim Beeston, because you've got like these two seemingly like are not connected narratives that sort of gradually come to make that work. You had to have really clever editors.
Yeah.
And every time like we transition from present to past, that's potentially problematic, right? Because that could be a real jarring moment or like and kind of annoy you, right? I mean, when non-chronological storytelling is done badly, it's really annoying.
Yeah.
And what I did brilliantly was just like keep the flow going, keep the kind of like emotional vibe going, and make sure that like when we transition, it's like motivated. It's for some reason we're transitioning now.
Yeah.
And then when you arrive at the new place, you're like, I see why we went from that to that, because that sort of says something. That a lot of that was them, really. That wasn't necessary.
It inspires the shit out of me.
It
because,
was great.
Yeah, I like I said, I'm editing ours right now, and we have a story about someone who is inspirational in this regard. And this is the first time we're doing a story about a family that I'm telling you that really will motivate you to understand that. Okay, I need to stop bitching about all the bad shit that happens in my life, because what these people have been through and what they've accomplished is amazing. It's one of those type of stories that Sam's putting together. During that editing process, I'm kind of like where you're at on this one, where that, you know, those transitions and trying to make it flow and keep up, and that emotional moments aren't lost because the audience is jarred by this sudden shift. As an editor, it's tricky. So whoever did edit this for you did a great fucking job, I think.
Beeston and Katie Breyer, like two tremendous editors who really understand like the emotion of the character and where there's some gains to be made by doing like clever moves.
Mm-hmm.
Very lucky to have those guys.
Definitely. Well, the whole crew, I mean, obviously, your whole crew pulled off an amazing, amazing feat.
And a long journey. Hell of a long journey.
Yeah.
By the way, the crew are all volunteers. Like, in production. I mean, basically, what I've learned is editors never work for free, right? But
I do, unfortunately.
Aaron does, but...
he edits our own shit, so...
but the production crew, like the shooters, the sound people, they all volunteered their time totally for free, and like we are hoping one day to be able to like recompense them somewhat, you know.
Absolutely.
But that's kind of cool, because that's similar to the ethos that Remote Area Medical started up with.
Yeah.
So okay, don't have a ton of money, we don't have a ton of experience, but maybe we can make this happen with, like, you know, an old pickup truck and some donated drugs. I mean, not us, the Stan, right?
Yeah.
And you know, some volunteer practitioners. We can just drive up to Sneedville in Cook County in 1991, and we can like just make it happen. And Stan, I don't know if Stan says, it's been a while since I've seen the movie, right? But I don't know if Stan says this, but there were quite a few naysayers at the beginning saying, oh, you know, that'll never work. You'll never be able to do anything kind of meaningful with just you and one nurse and some... What's the point, you know? But he started small and believed and grew and grew and grew, and now it's like a huge the biggest operation of its kind in America, delivering millions of dollars of treatment with like an army, an absolute army of volunteers scattered all across the country. So, you know,
it's beautiful, but I think volunteers come in droves when you have a cause that people believe in. I think that they will always volunteer their time. I would volunteer my time 100% for anything I believed in. So I think that that's the magic right there, is that you have something that a lot of people can identify with and believe in. And really, a lot of people, you know, I talk a lot of crap about people that are super privileged, but at the same time, like, because they're lucky, right? But I feel like a lot of them that do have the privilege that they were born into do want to give back for that. And they do want to give to the less fortunate because they are privileged. And those are the people that they get it. They get it. They understand that they're lucky and they're privileged and they have a great life. And they're giving to someone who doesn't have as good of things or has as much as they do. So I think that's magic in and of itself, to be honest, is that you pull those people that are born privileged and don't, you know, have the means to understand a life of struggle like a lot of us have learned personally.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't done that, but they have enough sense to understand it enough to want to be grateful for what they have.
You exist, and you have to meet them and pitch a film to them, and you know, we funded this with crowdfunders for like the first 3 or 4 years. And then we were very fortunate to meet a guy who was like, okay, I haven't got crazy money, but what I have got is enough money to give you pretty much every year the financing to cover production costs. Badass. Which were like, we're flying in, right? We're flying in and we're staying in hotels and, you know, all that stuff. And that's a iambic dream. And a guy called Wael Kobani, he believed in Stan, he believed in what we were doing. And he was like, yeah, I'm going to make sure that you have enough to get this film completed. And he's still, you know, he's still backing us now. So, yeah, I can speak to exactly what you just said. So those people do exist. So, you know, yeah, you shouldn't be too sort of.
Definitely. Yes, they do.
Definitely, yeah.
You know, and the thing about, before we end the show here soon, Stan's, the man had a dream, right? He had a dream and he had a vision and he was passionate about it. And that resonated because he didn't stop. And it's that type of personality. I think that, you know, if this show is really about like people out there wanting to do something that's outside the box. Since day one, we started this 4 years ago. That was the whole thing. You know, if you want to do something, it's kind of like what Will Smith said in Pursuit of Happiness. You know, you want to get something, go get it. Just go get it. You know, go after it and do it. You know, that's what he did. And I think when you're open and honest about that kind of thing, and it's all out there, like Stan seems to be, people respond. And yeah, that's the volunteer work you see. Mm-hmm. You know, these are all these people coming for this help. They believed it. I mean, if someone said there was free healthcare down the street, I probably wouldn't go because I'd be like, oh, they're full of shit. But I think people believed in this guy. You know, I think they heard the stories and understood it. That's why you had lines around the fucking block. You had to turn people away because you didn't have enough volunteers to take care of them. I mean, these kind of situations are so sad, but at the same time, you got one guy who's encouraged and helped, hopefully, secure enough people to believe in his vision and dream that to this day, like, Poppy, there you are right now doing your thing. You got people all down there.
We're getting after it.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's fucking, it gives me goosebumps. It's so badass.
It makes Poppy has cry.
A great story of why he's in the organization. Pop, you've got to tell them about how you ended up at RAM.
Please do.
Please.
Yeah,
absolutely. So back when I was a college student, Paul, that's university tree, my friend. When I was a college student, I was procrastinating, enjoying college like most privileged American students enjoy college.
Yeah.
And I didn't have much going on. I was like, you know, I should probably get one of those things called like an internship. My parents expect this out of me. It was way too late for that. Absolutely way too late for that. So I was just watching YouTube, just browsing around, looking at content, and I saw some content about Stan, about Rotary Medical. And I had a friend that was in pharmacy school down at the University of Tennessee based in Knoxville. And I knew that RAM was based. I learned that RAM was based in Knoxville. So I went down there with a good friend of and says, hey, can I stay for a couple of days? That turned into a summer. And once you meet Stan, once we got to meet him and work alongside, the phone doesn't stop ringing. So he would call and I'd be like, it's Thursday night. Starting the weekend and be like, yeah, we need help in Bradenton, Florida. Like, I'm enough in New York State. But you don't say no to Stan.
Get your ass down.
I answered the call and I kept coming back and volunteering. And after a while, RAM had gotten to a position where they were able to bring on some people full time, and there were others that were on full-time or staff. But it was a big transition for Stan to bring on paid staff. Even when I started, she would walk around and he would look at people and he'd be like, are we paying them? Be like, yeah, like we have to pay an accountant, Stan. Sorry. But like, that's what it was like.
Right.
And it was amazing. I learned to take every opportunity that stands through your way. Just go with it, leave. And sometimes it was, how are you going to drive cattle? cross country and you're like, I don't know, Stan, but we'll get it done. You didn't say no to him. You just figured out how to get it done. And that's the true beauty in what Stan could do. And through the organization, we still do. We don't look at a problem and say, oh, yeah, that's a tough one. We look at it and just figure, how are we going to get this done? How are we going to bring care to these people? And, you know, you make it out on November 14th. You see Stan Brock, Medicine Man. You get out there, you watch it. And that bonus content, you hear about some crazy new things that we are working on for projects. Because we're not just out here putting Band-Aids on people. We're delivering real quality care, and we're committed to that. We got some cool new technology that's getting out there to make sure that people know that everyone deserves the right to healthcare. And not only just healthcare, but high quality, affordable, accessible healthcare. We're not the solution, but we'll get after it. We'll keep doing it weekend after weekend after weekend, year round, until we're no longer needed, at which point we get back international. And maybe someday, I'm sure the organization will outlive me. And that's my hope. All the staff here, Stan and one of the obituaries written about him in New York Times, they talked to Stan beforehand, and Stan gave the sentiment that he hopes that people won't remember him in 100 years. I hope the organization is not around in 100 years. I hope people have care, that they can get care, that they don't have to wait overnight in the cold parking lot in their car, that they don't have to scrape together their last $10 to put gas in the car to get to a RAM clinic. I hope it's not around in 100 years, but if need be, I'm sure it will be.
Well, if it's not, it will have had something probably to do with Stan. It will probably have something to do with him.
And Poppy, too. Like, and, the, yeah. Brother, thank you.
Yeah.
No, it's an important message to get out there.
Yeah, and thank you for what you've done.
Yeah, brother.
In the time that it's you've given.
It's a beautiful thing.
It is. It's incredible.
Make me feel stupid. I'm just trying to make movies. I ain't doing shit.
No. It's the volunteers that really get it done. The RAM staff here, we just drive trucks and pack stuff up and count things. And it's really the volunteers.
Another humble one. Here we go.
You're all very important.
You guys are
no, I just organize the truck driving. That's all I do.
Yeah. It's amazing, you guys. All right, Paul. So you got a movie coming out on the 14th. I heard about it. It sounds pretty good. You want to kind of give us the last little pitch here of what you hope was going to happen, where people can see this, what your plans are for the film and whatnot, and then we'll let you guys have your day.
Sure. So,
good evening.
Wherever you are in the world.
Yeah.
So the film tickets are available at Fathom Events. If you go Fathom Events, Medicine Man, Stan Brock Story, there's a zip code finder on there. So punch in your zip code, find the nearest theater. I think maximum is like 30 minutes away generally, but some of them are like 15 minutes from people's house. So great. Hopefully it's accessible to you. What we want to come out of this movie is to encourage people to volunteer for remote area medical, donate to remote area medical, and consider, if you are a medical practitioner or something, consider like getting together, forming a group, and inviting remote area medical to come to your community to deliver care. Remote area medical only ever go on invitation. So if anybody's thinking, you know, they're deliberately targeting areas, and I've even heard people say, oh, what remote area medical do makes America look bad because they're out there and they're helping people that, well, no way, because it's the other way around. It's communities that say, we have need, please come to us. So if you're one of those people that think you might be able to get a group together, you may not even have medical experience. You can still form a group, invite remote area medical to come to your community and help out. So those really are the three things I'd love to happen. Thank you.
It's awesome, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, dude. Great fucking story. Great movie. Great humanitarian cause. I mean, really. And I don't have much faith in humanity, to be honest with everybody. I really don't. But at the same time, I hear stories like this and I'm like, well, God damn it, I can do it too. And that's what, you know, this story taught me. Your film, Paul, taught me. Poppy, what you're doing over there right now, taught me. And Stan is fucking Tarzan. He's the man. Like, he is the man. That's the guy I wish I could always be like. That, even when I'm writing our stupid horror movies or our action films, that's my hero. That's my guy. It's his mentality that means everything to this planet. I swear to God, it is. I can feel it in my soul, my heart, my bones. I have since I was a little kid. And I think anybody who watches this movie, Paul, is going to get something out of it good. They're either going to get pissed off and go, oh, there's another fucking liberal political thing. Or they're going to fucking hear it.
Hopefully they don't.
And if they hear it, if they fucking hear it, they'll get what this man was trying to do, the movie that you wanted to portray and show. And Poppy, you guys, and what you're still doing to this day. It shows the legacy. And it's badass. I fucking love it. All right, that's all I got to say about it. Chuck, you want to close up the show for us, buddy, and then go watch this fucking movie, please?
Yeah, I'm going to add that to my date night tonight while I'm sitting there with myself.
Put it on.
No. Okay, first of all, both of you guys are both very humble people who like to thank everyone around you and everything that happens. Remember, both of you, you guys are two people who took your time and your efforts and made something beautiful happen, whether it be with this film, Paul, and telling this person's story that you directed everything through, whether it be bringing in the archivists, the editors, everybody that you brought in to tell your story was brought in by you. So please take a moment and take a bow at what you did. And Poppy, for what you do every day, you do so much for people that you don't know that you need to remember to stop once in a while and acknowledge that to yourself, because you are doing a lot for people that most people wouldn't stop and do. Now, I'm going to tell you, as the conservative of the group, it's not a liberal thing. It's not a conservative thing. It's not this. It's not that. What it is, it's about people helping other people. And one man's story is to how to make it all start. Because it all starts with one person. And I can tell you one thing. If you can tell a story that elicits an emotional response, whether it be a tear or anger or frustration, and you can, that is how we will actually make change. You want to make change? Elicit an emotional response from someone. Because no matter what, this change needs to happen. So from the conservatives to the liberals to whoever's sitting where and believes in what, I don't fucking care. Everybody needs and has the right to live the best lives possible. And this is something that can help you do it. Thank you both for doing what you do. You are an amazing couple of guys. And I have no idea, but I'm going to go volunteer something right now to somebody because I just feel like I have an obligation to do something now besides bounce on my ball and talk to my friends. So remember, everybody out there, think hard, because you're thinking anyway.
We'll see everybody later.
Bye. Bye. Thanks so much, you guys. For those of you that want to be a guest on Around the Reel, please email Sam at aroundthereel253@gmail.com.
That's aroundthereel253@gmail.com.
Not Messenger. Do not message Aaron on Messenger, because then he has to send you a message that says email Sam at aroundthereel253@gmail.com.
That's aroundthereel253@gmail.com.
How come they can't just message me again?
Because nobody wants to fucking talk to you.
Can anybody reach out that's an artist, filmmaker, actor?
If you're an artist of any kind, we want to hear from you.
But we are going to vet the crap out of you.
We don't care if you make millions of dollars in Hollywood or if you're just beginning your career in the art industry. We don't care. So everybody that wants to be on Around the Reel, yes, we want you.
That's aroundthereel253@gmail.com.
This week's episode is brought to you by Entrepreneur Swag Shop. As business owners, it's important that we create the right environment and surround ourselves with the right people and the right things to keep you focused and motivated.
Entrepreneur Swag Shop offers clothing and accessories designed to empower entrepreneurs to share their message, their beliefs, and their journey with the world. Through inspiration and identity, the powerful messages printed on the items will help align you with who you want to be and what you want to achieve.
Whether you are new or experienced, male or female, young or old, you'll absolutely find a message that resonates with you. Visit entrepreneurswagshop.com and use code AROUNDTHEREAL during checkout to get 10% off your order today.
Get that swag, people.